My name is Deb Werner, and in addition to walking around and handing the microphone to people, I am the librarian for science instruction and outreach here at the Carrar Library and part of the planning committee for the symposium. And it's my pleasure to introduce the remaining speakers this afternoon as they're getting their microphones put on right now. We have Karen Hogenboom and Mary Alice Wu. Karen Hogenboom has been the numeric and spatial data librarian at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign since August 2009. Her previous position at the University of Illinois was in the Government Documents Library, where she was a specialist in Illinois government information and pursued her interests in training and instruction for librarians and students using government information. She has also worked as a librarian for the Illinois General Assembly. Her research interests include the political and technological obstacles to using government information, as well as statistical and geographic information literacy. Mary Alice Wu is the manager of the Statistics GIS Graduate Consultants at Atlas and an adjunct assistant professor in the Department of Sociology. She has a PhD in sociology from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and has been working in the Statistical GIS Data and Survey Research Consulting Unit of Atlas since 1999. Her recent research focuses on the economic and health empowerment of women in developing nations. Her other projects relate to program evaluations in academia, including research on the impact of MOOCs, massive open online courses. She has taught several courses at UIUC, including Introduction to Social Statistics and Social Research Methods.
Hello. Hopefully I have got this on correctly. And I have my slides. All right. Well, let me first start off with saying you probably figured out I'm not a librarian. And so I've found this very fascinating to listen to all the presentations today because I see a lot of relevancy interdisciplinary. And so I'm going to take back some of the stuff that I learned today back to my college and talk to some of our researchers about how they can use library science in their own particular science. So thank you. I think it's really interesting. Today I'm going to talk a bit about how we came to where we are. And if you bear with me, I'm going to give you a little bit of background in terms of where our services started and then how we got to where we are today, primarily because I think that that story is very common amongst a lot of academics. And so we started from a ground-up approach. So we're going to go through who we are, and I get to cover that half. And then I'm going to turn it over to Karen, and Karen's going to talk about the library. And so how we got to the data services that we're on right now with limited resources, how we built our services, what we plan to do in the future, some of the gaps in our services, and then there's always challenges. There's always things that we haven't been able to figure out, and we welcome anybody's input in terms of telling us how we should be doing something. So that's kind of an overview of what we're going to be doing today. So a little bit of background. I was talking with somebody at lunch, and they said, have you ever heard of ICPSR? I said, actually, we were one of the founders of ICPSR. So ICPSR is the Interconsortium of Political and Social Research. And that was formed in the 60s, and that is run out of the University of Michigan. So ICPSR is kind of what started our organization. There were several professors in political science that they were able to get some professors in sociology to come together and say, this is really important. It's really important for us to be able to deposit our research so that other people can access it. And so in the 60s, they did that. And then in the 70s, there was this light revolution with computers. And so people decided, oh, well, it would be a great idea for us to be able to teach people how to use the data, how to get on a computer, how to reboot it, how to use a mouse, all of this lovely stuff. And so was born the Social Science Quantitative Lab, or what we refer to as SSQL. If you're like University of Illinois, you're going to have a lot of acronyms. So please stop me if I say an acronym and I don't tell you what that means. So we have the Social Science Quantitative Lab, and notice one thing here. We're talking about social sciences. So we started with the political sciences, the sociologists. They formed this lab. I was talking to another person at lunch who was talking about these silos, these little labs hidden behind doors, right? That's what we were. We are this little lab hidden on the second floor of Lincoln Hall, and we were hidden behind this door, and graduate students would know where we were, and some of the faculty would know where we were, but nobody else really knew where we were, and we didn't really help anybody else. We were just kind of back there serving those needs at the time, and as I said, this is in the 70s. There aren't a lot of people using computers. Those lovely data cards that somebody was talking about earlier, still in use. People are still feeding data cards in. So we enter into, we go ahead a couple of decades, and all of a sudden, campus realizes that these computers are taking off. That, you know what, there's more than just these little people in little departments who need to access computers. Really, this is something that the campus should be looking at. And hence was born CITES, which actually had a different acronym at the time, but that's what we call them now. It's the Campus Information Technologies and Education Services. And that's a campus-wide service, and I like to call them the utilities of the campus. They make sure that we have a network. They make sure we have wireless. They make sure our computers are running. They have servers, so they're like the backbone of that entire infrastructure. Well, they decided in the 90s that it was time to provide researchers and educators across campus with these resources that SSQL was providing to the social sciences. And so we entered into a partnership with them, and it was run jointly by the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences, which is what housed SSQL, and it was run jointly with CITES. And it was a 50-50 split in terms of funding. It was a 50-50 split in terms of who was appointed and how people were paid, in terms of labs that we built and so forth. And then, dun, 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 what happens? The financial crisis, right? So CITES decided, researchers, they don't need that stuff anymore. We need to put our focus on something else. So they cut everything. They just went across the board and they said, goodbye, we don't really need you guys anymore. And luckily for us, the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences said, wait a second, you guys are important. We need to make sure that your services are still available, especially to our researchers and our classes that use your services. So, thank you, Karen. So hence was born ATLAS. And ATLAS is Applied Technologies for Learning in the Arts and Sciences. And we serve 63 different departments. We are the largest college with the largest faculty, the largest number of students in the University of Illinois system. So that's three campuses. And so we're a pretty large unit. And the nice thing is since we're a large unit, we cover a lot of people. But of course, we don't cover everybody. So there were three general things that we provided services on campus. We have a data repository, which is a lot what you guys are talking about today. And we have a data archivist, and she calls it a misnomer because she's really not an archivist. She's not a librarian. To her, a data archivist means that she is able to help people find data and then extract the data and provide a data set that's workable to them. So it doesn't really go with archiving in the traditional sense, but that's what they called her position at the time. So the data repository also includes our subscription to ICPSR. The College of Liberal Arts and Sciences paid that subscription for the past decade, and we'll get to how that funding goes now. We also have another data repository that we pay for, which is Roper. I haven't heard anybody talk about Roper, University of Connecticut, really cool data repository. So we had the data services side, and then we had statistics GIS consulting. And so we provide a lab, and I have another slide on what we do. So we have data services. We have graduate students that we hire across the campus. We train those graduate students. And then they provide consulting services for us. And then we move into the late 2000s, and everybody wants to give you an online survey, right? Everybody wants to evaluate, how was this symposium? How was my program? How did we do? Everybody wants to do that. And guess what? If you've taken some of those surveys, they're not all good. And that is nothing to say about the survey that you're going to take today, which everybody should take. So we started getting questions about, oh, well, we want to do this little internet poll, and we want to find out, you know, this information. And so we started really researching this because we had this experience with data repositories. We had this experience with using the census and asking questions. We had experience with looking at the ANS, which is the American National Election Survey. There we go. That's ANES. So we had that experience with those data repositories, with those data sets, which led us down the road of knowing when you have a good question, when you can analyze that question, and when you have a bad question, which gives you bad data. So that's how we came to survey research, and it's exploded. We have so much survey research, we at times can't handle it. And I was really fascinated to hear about the clickstream data, because we're dealing with clickstream data with MOOCs right now. And we have, just from a year, a quarter of a billion records, which is huge. Usually our surveys are max 10,000 people. So to have a quarter of a billion records is a whole different scale for us. And so we're kind of struggling to figure out how to do that and putting a lot of effort into that. So we were fortunate and able to hire a research coordinator to help us with some of that stuff. We still have graduate students, and lately we've started an internship program for undergraduate students. We are an academic unit, even though we fix people's computers. So in addition to doing that kind of hardware, software stuff, we also train people. And our mission is to ensure that we have ready students for the workforce, for further graduate studies. So we've been really fortunate to kind of start that program. So I probably have gone over the next slide. So this is exactly what we do now. Our services include an open lab. We have drop-in consulting. Anybody can come in during the day and ask questions on how to do survey research, how to run statistics, how to do GIS, how to get data, how to prepare their data, all that stuff. We have about 20 different programs that we pay for to be in that open lab facility. These are, by the way, only for LAS. Now, we don't kick people out, you know, if they're working in the lab, but we do kind of, you know, limit the amount of questions that we allow them to ask in that lab. That's the drop-in consulting. We also teach 12 different workshops each semester, so we're teaching 24 different workshops. We teach things ranging from R to SPSS to ArcGIS, which gives our graduate students the ability to teach, the ability to prepare documentation. A lot of our workshops have workbooks that are 40 pages long that they write. And then we do data preparation for people, and then we do survey research, which I talked a little bit about. So those are the current services that we provide. Our staffing is 3 full-time people, if you include me, but my time is not always on this. We have 5 graduate students, and now we have 4 interns. So that's kind of our staff that provides all these services for the College of LAS. So what's on the next slide? All right, so now I get to turn it over to Karen, who's going to talk about where the library is coming from.
Okay, and my story is much shorter because we do not have this long history of providing data services. We were looking about 2007, 2008, realizing that we really did need to help people in the same ways that Atlas has been helping people. We had nobody with that expertise in the library at all. We had no money. So what do we do? Okay, we did have an opportunity, I guess you can call it. Our government documents library was slated to close. We have been going through a long process, actually, of combining units and services. So I was there and had an opportunity to reshape my position and said, okay, you know, I can start. You know, I can get us started. And at the same time, I'm kind of speaking for Mary Alice, but Atlas was talking about reaching out beyond the College of LAS and being able to serve users who they knew needed their help. Okay. But, you know, because they are funded by the College of LAS, that needed to be done kind of carefully, I think is a fair statement.
Yeah. Definitely a fair statement.
Yes. So we started to talk. We also had a new unit called the Scholarly Commons that we were starting to talk about developing as a way to help researchers on campus who were doing all kinds of data-intensive, computing-intensive research, also to help them with issues around open access and author rights, scholarly communication. So we thought, you know, that was nowhere near implementation, but we wanted to kind of roll those things up together and keep them going. So that's where we were. And for the library specifically, I mean, we realized people were coming in with GIS questions, which we didn't have any software or expertise to deal with. We had our whole rich, you know, 100-year-old federal depository library collection, which included a lot of statistics. And at that point, if you went to look for something, it was online. But you could tell that they had collected the information you wanted, but they just hadn't published it quite the way that you would like to see it. You know, the user was like, well, it's surely if they asked, you know, occupation and ancestry, you could get the Italian teachers in the U.S. It's like, well, no, nobody actually published that table. So we needed a little more expertise and a way to help people to get into the data to pull that out. Yeah, and we felt like data on campus was becoming so research intensive that if we didn't move with that, we would just become where the books are, you know, which was not what we wanted. So. Okay, and this is back to you.
Back to me. I feel like this isn't on. There we go. All right. So as Karen mentioned, two things kind of drove, at least from our perspective, drove the collaboration and the conversation that we had about providing services with the library. The first one is always finances. So in terms of who does funding, how much funding people have. So both of us were a little bit poor at the time, so we thought maybe if we collaborated a little bit, we could be a little more wealthy. In addition, we did get a lot of people in our lab, which we would have to turn away or tell them we were going to charge them. So we got a lot of people who would come in and say, oh, well, I need help with blah, blah, blah. And we would ask them what college they were from and say, okay, well, we can answer a couple of questions, but after that, we're going to have to charge you. So for those two reasons, Atlas was interested in talking with the library to see how we could team up with one another and provide electronic data assistance to campus. Meaning, what was our parameters here? We wanted to help people find data, okay? And that seems to be relevant to the library, right? You guys are helping them find resources. So we wanted to be able to help people find data, existing data, so people are doing secondary data analysis. And then the big thing that everybody underestimates in terms of data is the amount of time it takes to prepare that data for your analysis. So secondary data analysis, i.e. somebody else has gathered the data and you want to use it now, they collected it for their purposes. And oftentimes you can use it for your purpose, but you got to do a bit of massaging. And I always joke with people, I said, look, you have to schedule for your dissertation, schedule 70% to prepare your data and 30% to actually run the analysis. Because that's really, in my opinion, what happens when you do data analysis with secondary data. So that was our goal, was to provide those two items. And how we met that goal was we first wanted to have the person who is the most knowledgeable on our campus, who is housed in my office, Dawn. She was the consultant who sat in the reading room, and she sat at this little computer in the middle of this big library with lots of big wooden desks and, you know, the rows of books and so forth. And she sat there with a little sign, a little tent, said data services, come visit me, come ask me a question. And some people found her, not a lot of people, but some people would come and ask her questions. It reminded me a little bit of when the census first went online, and I was an undergrad student. I ended up at the Government Docs Library because I went to the UIUC, and there was this one machine hidden in the corner where you could access the census. That was it. And that kind of reminded me a little bit about Dawn, Dawn sitting at this table with one computer waiting for questions to be asked. So from that experience, we realized a couple of things. Well, the first thing is that we can't rely on Dawn. I mean, Dawn can't be the only person on campus who can help people. I mean, we have 40,000 students. We can't have 1 to 40,000. That's not feasible. So the first thing that we decided was we really needed to bring some of the librarians up to speed in terms of the type of services that we wanted to provide. So we decided to identify, we had a, it wasn't a, was it a task force?
Initially.
Okay, initially it was a task force. So we had this task force, and we had certain librarians in different subject matter fields. So we had one in business. I think we had one, I can't remember where Jacoby was. I think she was in social sciences. So we had these different subject matters, and the idea was that they would shadow Dawn as she worked with different clients to kind of learn. So in addition to finding data, which it can be a struggle sometimes, there is another kind of barrier, which is how do you process that data? What programs do you use? What do you use? R, which is an open source program? Do you use SAS, which is a program that happens to be licensed on our campus? There's all these different packages that you can use, and at least amongst the librarians that I had met, they had never worked with these programs. So part of that cross-training actually involved teaching software, teaching syntax. And Dawn really is the person on our campus who knows the most about that process. So that was a good cross-training opportunity for us. So if we go on to, so that's phase one, the desk, one person sitting there. And then we kind of expanded a little bit in terms of cross-training some of the librarians who are going to help out with this service. Some of our librarians went and took some courses in GIS. GIS stands for Geographic Information Systems, if you guys don't know that. It's not Guided Individual Study, which is another acronym on our campus. So I know Karen was one, and I think one of our graduate students in GISLIS took some geography courses. Geography actually in our university has been renamed Geography and GIS, so they're pretty big in GIS right now. And then we also brought in addition to Dawn, we started bringing in some of our graduate students that work in Atlas. And so we had an Atlas consultant who came in, and we had Dawn who came in. And at that point, I hope I'm not jumping ahead here, we had a little bit of a space now defined for the service. So we moved off of the nice, beautiful wooden desks that I want to take home one of these days, and we went into this area that was kind of off to the side, but we had our own suite of rooms. There's about two rooms in there, and so now we have a little defined space, dedicated service space, and in addition, during that time frame, we decided that we would start some workshops specifically geared towards finding data. Those are not part of the workshop series that we teach in Atlas. So we decided it would be good if we could help people like find strategies in the data repositories that we already pay for, how they can find data. So we wrote some workshops and gave those, and we still give those actually. We also wanted to get the word out. We wanted to make sure that people knew where to find us. And so we had flyers. We did a survey. We sent a survey out to all of the graduate students asking them, you know, what do they know in terms of software, you know, what challenges are they facing? Have they ever heard of some of the things that we have? It's always fascinating to me that it doesn't matter. In fact, I saw somebody here today from GISLIS. It doesn't matter how many people I run into. I always find out some new service that I never knew existed in my backyard. And that's what we were trying to break down. We were trying to break down this idea that, you know, we know that people need it, but we don't think they know that it actually exists. So that was the purpose of the flyers. That was the purpose of the survey, was kind of this outreach. And then we had a data purchase program, which I'll let Karen talk more about.
Sure.
So I'm going to turn it over to her, because that's her bailiwick. She does all that.
Yeah, I'm also the dedicated librarian listed up there. But the data purchase program, from the survey, we realized that one of the things that people were really struggling with was getting a hold of the data they needed. You know, they might be a PhD student who needs a $2,000 data set to finish their research. It's not much money for the library. It's a ton of money for a graduate student. So we, every year, did a little publicity blitz saying, you know, submit an application, tell us about your research, tell us what you need. If it's less than $5,000 and we can make it available to campus, we will try to buy it for you. And that was some really nice publicity for us. You know, people started to see the library as a place to go for data, which is what we wanted kind of in a global sense. They got what they needed, some of them at least. I mean, I have some war stories about those purchases. Some of the vendors were such tiny associations. They had only ever sold their data to individuals before. And the idea of working with the library just took a lot of explanation. What do you mean 40,000 people can get at this data? So that's been a really learning process for everybody, I think. But that was a good way to increase our visibility. We've gradually moved into larger and larger space, which has been good, and more visible space from a cubicle in an office. You know, first that very visible but yet invisible space where Dawn sat with her little paper tent, to a cubicle, to a small office, and now we have a larger space that we work in, with where we can kind of roll in with some publicity that's being done more generally with the scholarly commons. So that's been a nice progression. About this time, we had a graduate assistant in the scholarly commons who was really good at GIS and started a whole series of workshops, and then he graduated. And we didn't offer those anymore for a while. So we're getting more sustainable, but not quite there yet. We had 5 afternoons a week, and then we had to drop down to 4 because he left. But a couple librarians also sitting at that desk giving help, as well as the one GA from Atlas and Dawn, the data archivist. So some consistent services there. And finally, this is pretty much to the present. We've got a bigger space. We've got a permanent committee backing this up, so they help with the workshops that we're running. They help with the data purchase program, which has a lot of back-end work related to it. We also have the Survey Research Lab on campus as a partner now. They do one of our afternoons of consulting. We can direct people to them. Kind of the philosophy in the scholarly commons is not you walk in, whatever you ask, we can help you. Because we've got questions, everything from how do I OCR text to how do I do a model in GIS? There's no way we can staff for that, really. So we make appointments for people a lot of times. But we're adding workshops, and we've got a really solid 5 afternoons a week now. I don't think we'll have to drop back anymore. Okay, and I'm also covering future plans. We have a permanent GIS person, so we won't have to keep pulling workshops anymore. He's starting June 1st, so I'm very excited about that. We also have a research data initiative happening on campus, which is more the sort of thing that Viv was talking about, working with researchers to manage their data, to archive it, either with an archive that we'll create or with a disciplinary archive. But that has just getting off the ground, and I'm hoping integrate might be a strong word, but work closely together, and I'm not sure what that's going to look like. We're also working to offer in the fall very granular workshops on managing data. We were really inspired by the Purdue project that some of us went to their symposium last fall, so those will be coming up too. Yep.
We kind of took you through kind of our story and what we do. But of course, there's things that we haven't at least figured out an answer to yet. There's things that we may not find an answer to. The first one, I think, and it's the hardest one because we've really struggled with it for the past couple of years, is how do we get the word out? And we actually find this a lot with just internally within Atlas. We have students and professors who will come to a point in their research that they all of a sudden realize they need assistance. And all of a sudden they have a grant deadline in 24 hours. Or they have to turn in their dissertation in 2 weeks. This has happened to me numerous times. And I'm like, if you had come to me a couple of months ago, maybe we could have helped you along this process. So how do we get the word out and convince people that they really need to speak with us sooner rather than later? And this seems to be a common theme here today. We've got data management. Well, in addition to data management, we have just preparing your data. How do you get that data? And they underestimate how much time it's going to take for them to find data, to prepare data, to do their analysis. So that's a huge challenge for us. But half of that is just letting people know we exist, right? So we've tried different things. I think people have even suggested putting on bus little things on the bus MTB. And I mean, we haven't done that one yet. We're going to put Karen on the side of the bus that goes through Champaign-Urbana. They're all going to be knocking on her door. The second thing that we struggle a bit with is appropriateness of services. And I don't know how this works in the librarian world, but sometimes we have usually graduate students, not faculty, who really want us to do their work. And, you know, we have a rule. I have a rule. I'm not doing your homework. Like, I'll show you how to do something. If you need to run a regression model, I'll teach you how to run that. But don't give me your data so that I can run it so you can turn it into your professor. That's not my job. My job is to make you self-sufficient. And so in terms of appropriateness of services, there's really two things there. The first one is how do you draw that line, and how do you let the person that you're helping know that now I'm handing it off to you, now it's your responsibility to take it from here. And the second part is we have drawn a line in terms of what services we will provide at data services. So our line is we will help you get your data ready for analysis. But beyond that, you need to either go to your faculty member, go to your colleague, or go to another service in order to do the statistical procedures. And that's been really challenging to make people see that line and to then show them where to go. We do have resources on campus that does that, but that's not something that we do at data services. So that goes to the appropriate depth of services and more challenges and so forth. Those are like basically our three challenges that we have that come to mind that we had written down. Karen, did I leave anything off?
The only thing I would say, kind of the reason for not going past that loading into software, is that in every discipline, the methodology is a little bit different. I mean, if I tell you to do something for your dissertation, you know, you don't want me doing that. Trust me. Oh yeah, that's a P test. Yeah, no. They need to go and know what's the standard in their field for what they're doing. And there's no way I can know what all that is. You know, I'm a generalist in a lot of ways. So one of the workshops we're working on is how to figure that out. You know, how maybe you can go into a journal database and find articles that have a similar type of problem than what you're trying to analyze, and how do they do it? You know, and how do you find those? You know, because if you say, oh, just go talk to your advisor, some of them are like, oh, okay, I'll do that. And others are like, my advisor is in Africa for the next, you know, 6 months. I can't do that. So to give them some tools, I think, would be good.
If I can just bounce off of that, Karen, one thing we found with some people is that they don't either agree with their faculty advisor and they want information that they can take back to their faculty advisor and say, see, this is the way I should be doing it. The other thing that we have found sometimes is people will bring us articles, journal articles, and say, read this. And tell, oh yeah, they do this. Read this and tell me how to do exactly that. Oh, okay. So in terms of appropriateness and depths of services, it's an interesting line. And we have to defer to the faculty members. If the faculty member is telling you that you need to do X, Y, and Z, it is not within our expertise or our responsibility to tell you, no, go back and tell them that's wrong. You shouldn't be doing that. So I find that challenging as well.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Any questions?
This is for Karen. Mm-hmm. Both of you led with the ICPSR, and so that's the social sciences, and then we've mostly been talking about STEM mm-hmm. fields here today. But I'm curious, are you at all finding the bubbling up of digital humanities questions or
some? You know, yeah, we do have a digital humanities librarian, and she gets some things directly. We get mostly through GIS. We get some digital humanities work. I worked with a Russian history class last semester that was doing GIS projects on, you know, early modern Russia and digitizing things and playing around. So yeah, that's most of the overlap is there.
Another question?
The data purchase program, do you set, you have a 5,000 and under, but do you have an internal cap? Like, do you set aside at the beginning of the fiscal year $20,000 that can be used for this, or how do you do that and determine how much?
Yeah, it's a collections budget, just like all our other collections budgets, and kind of determined in the same way everything is. You know, how much did you spend last year? How much do we have? It's been around 20 or 25,000 every year.
More requests than that, or does that match?
So far, it's matched pretty well. One year, we had like $5,000 requests, and we had 25,000. Other years, it's, you know, smaller amounts, but more requests. It just varies.
Are there any final questions? Okay, thank you.